Hi friends, this is Christine Hoover from GraceCoversMe.com, and I want to welcome you to the By Faith podcast, where each week this season I'm talking with a guest about the ins and outs of friendship. As I wrote about in my book, Messy Beautiful Friendship, friendship isn't easy for anyone. It takes time, intentionality, and lots of grace. And sometimes we have to navigate complexities and hurts in friendship that leave us uncertain and crushed. I'm right there with you, and my guests are here to help us think through it all. We've spent the first part of this season together laying a foundation for friendship, touching on everything from how to make friends to how we can take those friendships deeper. At this point in the season, we are going to take a little turn in order to discuss the messier parts of friendship. Over the course of the next 3 weeks, we'll talk about hurts, conflict, mistakes we often make in friendship, and how we can navigate all of these things with a biblical perspective. Today, my guest on By Faith is Ruth Jo Simons. You may know her as the talented artist behind Grace Laced, an online shop featuring prints, canvases, and calendars. But Ruth is also wife to Troy, mom of 6 boys, and the author of several books that incorporate both her written words and her beautiful artwork. I asked Ruth to join me in order to talk about hurts in friendship, and what she shares was so helpful to me personally. I know it will be to you as well. One thing I need to mention is that Ruth and I recorded this conversation over a year ago, just as I was preparing to launch my book, Messy Beautiful Friendship, and she was preparing to launch her book, Grace Laced. So although our conversation is a tad bit dated, the good news is that the principles she shares are not dated, and also the good news is that both of these books are out and available for you today. No pre-ordering and waiting necessary. Okay, with that said, let's get to it. Here is my conversation with Ruth Jo Simons. Hey guys, I'm Christine Hoover from GraceCoversMe.com, and I am so honored to have Ruth Jo Simons. Did I say it right?
Yes, you did. Great.
Okay. Ruth Jo Simons from GraceLace.com, who I have followed and admired from afar, and I'm so excited to get to talk to her today. Ruth, welcome.
Thanks for having me. I'm so glad to be here.
And I would love for you to introduce yourself, because I know you have... Well, there are a lot of things going on. So tell us about you.
So I'm a mom of 6 young boys. My youngest is almost 4. My oldest is just turned 15. I've been married for almost 19 years to my husband, Troy, who has been a pastor and a headmaster of a school. And we are currently now full-time with Grace Laced, which is a blog that's celebrating 10 years this summer, but recently in the last 4 years has become a shop online where I sell my artwork, scripture prints, and really it's just a marriage of beauty and truth together because I love art, but I really love the word more.
Your work is so beautiful. I love it. So when you say 6 boys, I have 3 boys, and that is enough laundry and enough food and enough of a smelly bathroom.
Oh my goodness. And they just, especially now that it's warmer, they come in. Yesterday, one of them came in all bustling and happy, and he just like was so warm and moisty sweatiness. And I was like, oh, I just wanted to like hug him and then like put him to this. I was like, oh my goodness. He just smelled like summer and dirt. So
how do you keep the bathroom clean? That's what I want to know.
You know, you train them up to do it. And they clean their own bathrooms. And, you know, I do have help. I have 2 sweet girls who come regularly to help with shop things, as well as a mother's helper to me. But I always tell them, I'm like, I need these boys to like know how to do it. So anytime they can like help supervise and direct them to do it, they will. So, but I do have some extra help with laundry. Otherwise, just 6, well, the big 2 boys actually do their own laundry and everything on their own. But the youngest 4, we do have some help with that to like make sure the laundry, clean clothes go in the right drawers.
Okay, so tell me, you have a book coming out too.
I do. It's called Grace Laced, Discovering Timeless Truths Through Seasons of the Heart. And it's a journey through what I really see as paired with the natural seasons. But the seasons of our heart for me are things like in the wintertime when things are cold and weary and we're just like waiting for things to like actually the soil to break up, and it's resting in the God's character, because we have to rest and and trust him when things don't seem like they're alive. And then spring is rehearsing the truths of what he says about us. Summer, when we really think through resting in his character and the truths of who we are, we can respond in faith. Mm-hmm. You can see there's four R's here. And then in fall, it's remembering his provision, because for those of us in ministry, sometimes you flourish and sometimes you're weary, and you just need to remember that he provides for those seasons. So it's it's a four color hardback, coffee table worthy, full art. And I prefer not to call them devotionals. They're 32 readings that really, I hope, are perennial, and for us to walk through whenever you find yourself in one of those seasons, to go back to those truths. Mm. And there's a complimenting, it's a journal that goes with it as well.
That's great. I can't wait to see it.
They're both on Amazon.
So. Well, and I am actually talking with you about friendship, because I have a book coming out that I'm so honored that you would endorse it, about friendship. And I want to talk to you today about the messy part of friendship. The book's called Messy, Beautiful Friendship.
You're so brave to write that. I love it.
So I'm bringing all the hard stuff to you about the messy side of friendship.
I would love to talk about how to fit in coffee dates, but again, you got the hard questions right to me. Thank you so much.
let's just dive in. And I would love to know from you, have you experienced hurt in friendship? Because I think a lot of women have, but they kind of feel like, well, maybe I'm the only one who has this really deep wound that I'm carrying around, and that's kind of made me isolated and self-imposed isolation. Right. So I would love to know, have you experienced hurt in friendship, and what are some of the emotions and the thoughts that you had?
Ironically, all of us have experienced wounds in friendship, but we all at some point say, is it just me? I mean, I think everybody just sits there and in the middle of the hurt, with tears going down your face, you think, maybe there's something wrong with me. Like, I don't know how to be a friend. I don't know how to do this anymore. And I think, especially since I know a lot of your audience is in ministry, I think a lot of times we forget that the more you are vulnerable and you pour out into others' lives, the more the messiness will come out, like the messier the friendship is. If you constantly only go to dinner parties where you talk about TV shows, it probably won't get all that messy, right? It gets messy because we share our lives with people and we get intimate and vulnerable, and that provides opportunity for hurt. So if you fill in the blanks, I mean, I was a pastor's wife for over 10 years, led a ministry life for the last two decades. And I would say, absolutely, I've experienced it several times, and I have on several occasions wondered, is it just me? But as I get older, I realize it's truly an opportunity that the Lord uses, because we all have different versions of idols in our lives. And for me, one of the things that I struggle with is desiring for people to really understand my heart, and for them to there not to be conflict, for there not to be misunderstanding, and for everything to be comfortable and easy. That's my biggest idol. Like, I want things to just be right and easy, and I want everybody to like me. And that doesn't always happen. And even if you try your best, it doesn't always go that way. And so the Lord even uses that to mold and shape me personally.
Right. So what is your typical response when you have been wounded? How have you responded to that typically?
I've not always responded correctly, and it's changed some over the years. I will say that my immediate response is always so fleshly. My immediate response is always, I'm always tempted to only think from my perspective, to only rehearse over and over again the wrongs done. Like, I would never do that. I can't believe she said this. Or why would you possibly do it this way? Or whatever it is. My natural inclination is to always respond by remembering and rehearsing over and over again how somebody did or say or said something that I would never do. And then I can only think of it from my own perspective. Like, well, I did these things right, and I said these things right. And I come from a long line of hot-blooded women. And so, I mean, I'm not like naturally prone to being really gentle and thoughtful about things. I'm prone to getting angry and really upset about stuff. And so I would say my initial response is never super gracious, and I want to fight for my rights, and I want to say exactly what comes naturally. And if I, but for the grace of God and but for the gospel, I would always make things worse, because I would say a bunch of things that I don't mean. Mm-hmm. I would say that's my always my immediate response, where in my heart, I can see the sin in my own heart of how much I want to retaliate. And by God's grace, I think he's really softened that and caused me to turn the gospel to be a mirror to myself, and to change that perspective where I say, okay, regardless of what things are not set right, regardless of what the wound is, and regardless of how that hurts, I have hurt others. I have said those same things, maybe different words, but same heart, same agenda, same confusion, same misunderstanding. Mm-hmm. And so that certainly has been my goal, my aim. I don't do it perfectly. I mess up all the time. My husband, Troy, is truly my number one admonisher and encourager. And oftentimes he, even in his own hurt, he often just stops me and just says, hey, the gospel applies right here. So let's start there and let's reevaluate how we are sinners first and foremost.
So is that, I'm just thinking of deep wounds that I've had. I mean, not just a little word somebody said that, you know, I can get over that. But when I have felt betrayed, or I have felt just deeply, deeply wounded, and it's maybe not always something that I can address. Mm-hmm. Well, I want to talk about that in a second. How do we know when to address it? But how has God walked you through the process of forgiveness towards somebody that you maybe can't even really address it with them?
Oh, that's a good point. I think so often, you know, I have to think about it, not to pull out the Bible verses, but to think about it biblically, you know, Philippians 2:3, considering someone others more important than ourselves. Ephesians 4:20, bearing with one another. Those two, because that makes much of somebody else's heart, not just mine. Mm. And yet you're right. There are so many deep, deep conflicts where either circumstances make it so that there is really no forward motion. Like there's nowhere to actually go to correct situations. Sometimes there's an attempt at reconciliation, but there's only reconciliation to a certain point. And sometimes even if things are discussed and made right, your heart just hurts for a really, really long time. And that, I would say, probably is the way we all feel most of the time. We don't forget super easily, and our hearts just ache. And sometimes we ache because things are no longer the way they used to be. And friendships obviously change. Conflict or not, friendships change as seasons go on. Now that I'm in my 40s, I'm kind of astounded at how much friendships have changed through seasons of life. But conflicts really and hurts truly change the way that looks. And, you know, you ask about process, and I would just say that I think I'm so mesmerized by the idea of rehearsing truth to ourselves daily, because I don't know how to go one day or 1 minute without replacing the lies with truth. Because left up to myself, my everyday thought pattern would be some version of pride. It would bounce back and forth between utter pride and utter condemnation of myself. So I'd go back and forth between, I'm the lamest, most loserest person, the worst friend ever, or I can't ever get it right. I'm not made for relationship. I don't know how to love well, period. Two, I know what I'm doing, and everybody else screws everything else up, you know? And so I go back and forth between pride and condemnation, when the Lord really is using all those things that I'm fearful of and I don't feel like I have right to replace with the truth that he's transforming each of us, even that person who's wounded you. And so I think part of the process for me is to recognize that that hurt and that wound didn't happen in isolation outside the sovereignty of God. It did not happen outside the will of God in your life and in her life, that it didn't happen so that you would have one more thing to have to deal with, but it's all part of God's work in sanctifying you and sanctifying her. And when you think of it that way, I'm not telling you that that comes easy to me. That's the truth I have to rehearse to myself. Because when I wake up in the morning, I sometimes feel like these are all separate issues. Like I serve the Lord and I have this thing going on, but then I'm like, why do I have this big conflict and this trial and this pain in my life? When really God's sovereignty pushes those things together and says, I'm doing one singular work in you, which is to draw you closer to me. And if I have to use pain and wounds and the loss of things to draw you closer, I will. And so when I have that perspective, it helps me to continue to rehearse truth and speak the truth about what he's doing in the lives of someone who hurts me and my own life, and that he's not stopping in that. So just because I don't see the fruit of it right now doesn't mean he's not at work. Just because it doesn't feel like we're perfectly reconciled and everything is all good and everything that needs to be said has been said, doesn't mean that he's not going to bring that to fruition someday.
That's so good. And that makes me think of, you know, I had a situation where I felt really, really betrayed. It took me years to work through it. And I think sometimes we think forgiveness is so quick that we just, you know, oh, I forgive them and I move on. But it really is that process that God takes you through, what you're saying, to sanctify. He did that through me, and he showed me that he saw everything. He saw what happened. He knows that I was legitimately hurt, but he also sees my response. And if I choose to respond in sin to that hurt, then I become the hurter, the wounder too. And I also, you know, have to know that God sees that. And so I think it's good to just, what you're saying is it's a process, and God is at work. He's going to deal with us, and he's going to deal with the person that we feel wounded by. And so I would love to hear from you, Ruth, how you know when you need to address something with someone, and when you need to, as scripture says, bear with someone and overlook an offense. How do you know the difference?
I think that is the money question, right? That's the hardest one. You know, and I would say, So first of all, I do think that if you even live in a house with other people, you know there are millions of opportunities every day to overlook an offense. So there should be a lot of practice for such things, right? I mean, I'm married to a really wonderful but fallen man, and I have lots of opportunities to bear with him. And so that applies to friendships too. Like, the reality is, 9 times out of 10, we have opportunity to bear with one another, to pray for that person, and to overlook an offense and just apply grace. And I think when you address something is, and there's lots of different contexts for it, but I think a lot of times I boil it down to, one, if it's a sin issue that really needs to be addressed, and it really is an issue of truth or sin or harm to that person who is unaware and could really needs to see how that wound is really affecting things. But secondly, I think also when you've allowed the wound to fester in your own heart to the point where your bitterness is causing you to sin, and that means that you might even need to go to that person to confess your own bitterness and sin, as much as you're looking for, that confrontation and that healing, you're needing to confess yourself. And so I think there's always opportunity to address and talk about things, but I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't say that I'm definitely not the wisest person about this, but I do feel like in the last 20 years of ministry and friendships, I've really learned that sometimes timing is everything. And it's not always right the second that you feel like something needs to be addressed. And sometimes you can wait too long as well. But I had a really sweet experience this last summer with a friend who there was a conflict with, like, years ago, like 8 years ago. And it was a painful conflict. It was a conflict that, though we said it right, kind of left our friendship a little silent for a while. And there were years where we checked in, but we didn't really overlap, and we didn't see each other like we used to. We didn't talk constantly. Our families didn't get together constantly. But years later, as we both matured, as there was some time, as other scenarios brought us back together, it was precious to revisit that and to confess our sin to one another and to just really re-engage in friendship. And I think that brings us to even just the issue of true friendship, because not every, just because we live in a time where I think we throw around the words friend a lot. I mean, I know I do, because in general, when I speak to my Instagram audience, I do address in friendship in the sense that I'm speaking something from the heart my Instagram posts are actually never pre-written. I don't know how to do it. I can't schedule things. I just don't. So my Instagram posts really are actually in real time a version without details of how I actually am working through things in my own life. And so when I share those things, I do feel like the women who comment and respond and engage, I do feel a kinship with them. But friendship, that word, you know, we're of the English language, that is one word, and it doesn't define all those relationships. Are there friendships that are lifelong, true friendships? Yes, and those friendships address and absolutely go in there and dig deep and like till up the soil and make a mess and replant right away. Don't let the roots hang out there and fray and die in the sun. But sometimes we call friendship things where we're at a task together, we are working together, or we're bound in a context together. And when that season changes, those relationships change. And so I think part of the struggle is, as women, we often feel the pressure to maintain every relationship with every person we've ever said, thanks for being my friend too. And that pressure is so stressful now that we're on social media, because everybody is our friend and we see everybody being friends. And so then there's a sense of, I'm not hanging out with that person anymore. But that kind of strain and stress and pressure is crazy, because we can't be a true friend to everybody, not the way we really desire friendship. And so I think as I've gotten older, that's one thing that I've just had to let go of a little bit, is my understanding of what a friendship investment looks like, and that that's not quantity, but quality. And even within conflicts, that you have only so much energy to give towards working through misunderstanding and working through conflict. And you know, a true friendship is one where there's room to go there. You know, you can progress in that addressing, and you can walk through it and come out the other side being together still. And so
that's very good. I try to think of it, it's the difference between a relationship and a friendship. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of relationships. You have a lot. We all have a lot of relationships. That could mean anyone, from the person we buy our groceries from to the neighbor or whatever. But friendship, there's that we really only have the capacity for a few deep friends.
Absolutely.
And those are the people I'm always going to address.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm going to overlook a lot even with them, but they matter so much to me that I'm willing to, it's almost harder to address conflict with them because there's more to lose, sure. But I'm willing to do it because I value them so much. And I'm willing to receive that confrontation because I value them so much. And that's not to say I don't receive it from people that are not necessarily close friends, but I think you're right about defining friendship. We have to really think about, who are those people?
Well, I think I liken it unto my relationship with my husband, where I overlook lots of little things. If I were to address something every hour of every day that I don't, you know, that's crazy. And that wouldn't be gracious. But when we go on a date night or when we go on a walk, sometimes when the timing is right, I might, because I care about that relationship and because I know that he wants the same thing as I do, I go to him and say, hey, that one thing you said that day, that just hurt. And I think I didn't know how to respond to it right then, but I want to talk about it now. And the purpose for addressing is always because you have a future together. You have a future together, and you're going to walk in the newness of what that admonition is going to bring about. And so I think sometimes it just even boils down to, what is the purpose of addressing something? Because if our purpose is just to get the last word in, or to say, I have an opinion about this, or I need you to know that I'm right, then is it, you know, you have to really evaluate what your purpose is. I know that when I'm hurting, and somebody I love dearly in my family or a close friend or my husband wounds me, when I go to him, I can change the tone in which I go to him, because, and not that I always go to him with the right tone, I'm not saying that, but because you know that where you're going is, you're aiming for something that transcends the hurt in the moment, right?
Yeah, that's really good. So what about relationships that have changed maybe through the life circumstance? You've been close to somebody, a life circumstance changes. It may not necessarily be negative, But well, let's talk about when it is. It has been a negative thing, because are there times when you can reconcile, but the friendship looks different, that maybe you've put boundaries up in place that weren't there before? I don't know if I like that word, boundaries. I don't know. But is it okay for the relationship to have changed, even though you have reconciled? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And you know, I think, again, the reason why these questions are hard, thanks a lot, Christine, but the reason why these questions are hard is because in some sense, it depends on context, because I think relationships often change anyway because of the ages of our children and our availability and seasons of life. If we go to a different church, if we're involved in leadership in a different ministry, or our employment changes, those things change our relationships. I think the thing that I always have to address in my own heart is, if the relationship purely changes only on account of my bitterness, then that's really my issue. That's really, like, in my heart, it's like, oh, I am so bitter that I'm going to make that relationship pay and change. But if natural circumstances give space and give distance and cause it to look differently, and sometimes you make choices because that friendship really hasn't gone any direction that, let me just back up and say this. Troy's my husband. He likes to say to me often, he says that his definition of friendship is, and this is a loose definition, but a definition is someone who causes you to love Christ more. And so I think sometimes in this super social world that we live in, sometimes we say we're friends with folks, but it's just a lot of, like, hanging out, not edifying or encouraging one another closer to Christ. And you only have so much time. And so it's possible that you grow distant or your friendship changes simply on account of, like, I don't have time for that kind of hanging out or that kind of, and so you just get a little bit more defined about the relationship. So I think it's okay when relationships look different, but I always feel like I have to start first with, why is it different? Is it different because we have different goals now? We have different, we're in different spheres of work and interests, or do we have nothing really in common that overlaps our time, and time is precious, and we don't play on the same soccer team anymore, so it's kind of hard to spend time together. And then it helps you kind of define where you're going to prioritize those relationships. Doesn't mean you can't check in. Doesn't mean you can't wish them a happy birthday. It doesn't mean you can't send a card. But you cannot give that full, like, engaged, vulnerable friendship to every person that's been in your life in the last several, you know, decades or whatever. Yeah,
that's right. That's
a burden I put on myself, I think, sometimes.
So good. Well, do you think that there are ever times where you do put up, even though I said I don't like the word boundaries, mm-hmm. that you do kind of say, you know, this person, maybe several times,
sure,
it has been a hurtful situation, and maybe I don't need to be as close. You think, do you think that's appropriate? Yeah.
I do. And I think that obviously we're all speaking in generalities, and anytime I post about a subject like this, somebody will comment and say, I had a very abusive relationship, or somebody who treated me so wrongly. So obviously I just want to step in and say, like, no, we don't put pearls before swine. You know, we're not going to just offer ourselves vulnerably to anybody, especially if somebody who has this track record of betrayal or pain or not valuing your friendship, obviously. But at the same time, I think the thing that I keep coming back to over and over again is that you don't have to seek out opening up those, let's call it boundaries for now. I know that that's a hard, harsh word possibly, but it's not wise for us to constantly put ourselves in a situation where we're saying, let me please keep being vulnerable in the situation, despite the track record of how our relationship has gone. But if and when that relationship becomes available again, I keep coming back to the fact that we can be meek, and we have that ability, because that doesn't come from us, and that's from Christ. And so in my mind, I think, you know, meekness is power under control. So ultimately, it's not just simply turning the other cheek, but being able to say, okay, because I have what I need in Christ, it's okay to have a conversation that is uncomfortable, that is painful. It's okay to attend a party that isn't necessarily the most comfortable for me, or where I have a conflict with somebody, because that is an opportunity for Christ to be at work mm-hmm. through you and in you. We don't always have to do what comes most natural and what is most comfortable. I don't know if that helps at all.
I think that's really good. I think we can always honor people.
Yeah.
In every situation, we can honor people, but we don't have to be vulnerable with everyone. And in fact, I don't think we have really the capacity to do that. I think that would be foolish to be vulnerable with everyone no matter what. But
I think the tendency, the reality though, is the tendency is whether, especially if you have grown up in the church and you've really invested deeply with women, and you know the church is full of sinners, and so we're all going to hurt one another.
Yeah.
And the tendency is definitely to shirk from relationships and to really say, "That's it." Like I'm, you know, I think that that's the reason why social media is so easy for all of us, because you know, texting, social media, all those ways of engaging, especially in seasons of life when you're busy with littles, keeps you at home and keeps you protected. It makes you feel protected. But the reality is those genuine friendships are the ones who come over to your house and clean out your fridge with you as you talk through things, and are there to catch those tears when you're crying the bucketfuls, and can't do that online as easily.
Mm.
Not that those aren't real relationships. I have some wonderful relationships online, but just that, that the wounds that happen often happen in person, and the healing also needs to happen in person. You know, we need to engage in real life as well.
That is so true. So true. And I just read a post about that on, I can't remember where I read it, but about church is harder than your face being on Facebook kind of thing. Like relationships in real life are hard. And I think we need to be willing to, I have believed for so long that it shouldn't be that hard. The friendship should not be hard.
I know.
True friendship, it should be easy. It should be simple. It should be come naturally. There should not be conflict. And really, in reality, the opposite is true. Friendship that we, valuable lifelong friendship, you eventually are going to have to work through conflict and be willing to address things with one another. And that's how we live in an imperfect world. We're imperfect people. The church is imperfect. We're going to have conflict. So we have to be willing to engage gentle, loving conflict with one another.
Right. You know, I was thinking about a conversation I had with a friend some weeks back, and we were in disagreement about something. And it was so shocking to me that I'm sitting there looking at this dear friend and we weren't on the same page. And I was kind of like, like, how is this possible? Like, I really like you and we usually agree on everything, but you're kind of hurting my feelings and I kind of don't agree with you right now. And it was so wonderful, because what I loved about that moment was we both were able to giggle a little bit, laugh about how this is not our usual way, but right now we're acknowledging that this kind of hurts and we are on different, you know, we're addressing things a little bit differently, and that we love each other nonetheless. And I walked away from that, obviously, like achy and a little tired, because sometimes whenever you have to emotionally get into this conversation, you get kind of like, oh, I'm so tired, just put on Netflix. You know, you just get there like, shut down. But the wonderful thing about that as I left was like, that really is community and kingdom living, in that you can sit across the table from somebody you really care about and say, ooh, may God work on my heart in this. May God work on your heart in this. And we may not even see totally eye to eye on this right now, but I love you. And I hear the heart in which you're saying this. Please hear my heart in objecting, you know, or whatever it is. And we're going to work through it. And I don't know why that seems so foreign, even to me. And I don't know about to everybody else, but like you said, I think it's so, like, I always think things that we adore and we love should come easily, but come on,
not
totally not true. Motherhood, marriage, nothing comes that easily. You know, you have to work and strive at it.
That's right. Well, Ruth, any last words about friendship just in general? It doesn't have to be about conflict, but maybe any advice you would give to women about friendship?
I think I'm in a season of really realizing that I'm always the person who wants to see the result, like, beautiful right now. Like, I want to, like, put in this big effort and have a big result. I saw a meme go by today about exercise, and I was laughing because it was, I'm totally this way where I'm like, I've done Whole 30 for 8 hours. I should really see results now. Like, why hasn't the weight not fallen off? Like, I ate like nothing but raw vegetables for the last 4 hours or whatever it is. That wasn't the meme, but it was something like that. And I tend to be that way about everything else. You know, like, I did this. Shouldn't it be perfect now? But what the Lord's teaching me over and over again, and it includes friendship, that the little things matter. So one step at a time, just getting up and doing it again tomorrow, as imperfect as you are as a friend, as much as you don't know how to love that person well, as much as you feel overlooked or uncared for, or maybe that you didn't get to say what you wanted to say, and maybe feeling like you're lonely, whatever it is, take the next step, do the next thing, send that one text, write that one card, go out to coffee, you know, just do one little thing next and don't give up on it, because it sure isn't going to look perfect by tomorrow. And just because you are being the friend that you really want to be doesn't mean you're going to have that reciprocated to you. And so the best way I know to engage any of this is really just to say, by the grace of God, I'll just put the next foot forward and be obedient with the next thing I know to do.
That is so good. You've had so much wisdom to share. I love it. Thank you for having me.
I appreciate it so much.
Thanks for your time, Ruth.
Thank you, Christine. You have a great day.
You too. I loved this conversation with Ruth, and it would not have been possible without the help and support of my Patreon partners. Their monthly support allows me to create and produce this podcast for your benefit. So I want to say a special thank you to them today. If you want to join them in helping By Faith continue, simply click through the link in the show notes of this episode. I also want you to know that every Wednesday, the day after By Faith releases, I jump on Instagram stories to answer any questions from the week's episode. What do you want to know or to talk about after listening to Ruth's wisdom? Find me on Instagram at ChristineHoover98 and let's chat. Join me next week as I talk with Hannah Anderson, author of Humble Roots, one of my favorite books, and her brand new book, All Things Good, which is about discernment. Hannah is going to help us apply discernment to our friendships, and I seriously took notes while we were talking. It is that good. You don't want to miss this episode, I promise. Okay, friends, have a great week, and until next time, keep walking forward by faith.